Hello, this is Bruce Johansson, Professor of Biblical Studies, School of Theology at Walla Walla University. My two colleagues, Dr. Carl Kosart and Dr. Paul Dibdahl, will assist me as we discuss Women of Mission, Agents of Hope again. This is probably one of the more difficult topics to deal with from a cultural point of view in the New Testament, because it seems that Jesus broke conventions and Paul seemed to uphold conventions with regard to women in public ministry and speaking in church and those kinds of things. I'm glad you gentlemen are here. Shall we get a snapshot of what sort of social standing did women have? And we could speak about both Jewish backgrounds and Greco-Roman backgrounds. What privileges, what standing would a woman have? What do we know? What records are there that tell us?
Well, it's interesting, actually. Something. It's very similar to our sitting, today, recording this, where men talking about women.
Yes.
And in the ancient world, that was, you don't see women authors, you don't see those roles. You see men. And unfortunately, in some of the cases that we see in the Greco-Roman world and the Jewish world, it wasn't the best scenarios all the time.
No.
Although a woman was valued as a mother and kind of the queen of the household, there are very positive things we see in Scripture about that. There are positive things, but there are also Jewish authors, Philo, for example, and others who their perspective of woman actually was they saw them as a someone on a lower level intellectually, et cetera. And it comes out. And so I think it's an important concept to talk about some of the perhaps negative perspectives of women outside of Scripture, because it helps us appreciate what we do see in Scripture.
In Scripture, yes.
Because there is a definite contrast.
Yeah. One of the passages that I just couldn't believe it when I first read it is from Sirach. Sirach is one of the books of the Apocrypha, and this man lived about 200 years before Christ, and his writings were preserved. There's a passage in chapter 42 that gives us really a stark picture of some men's view of women. I don't think this is general
across the board.
Do not look upon anyone. He's giving advice. Do not look on anyone for beauty. Do not sit in the midst of women, for from garments comes the moth, and from a woman comes woman's wickedness. Better, and this is the line that just blew me away, better is the wickedness of a man than a woman who does good. And it is a woman who brings shame and disgrace. And, of course, that's a reference back to the story of the fall. Which is interpreted very often in
negative.
Now that I'm sure that doesn't represent all attitudes,
no.
But boy, that was for somebody who was a wisdom teacher. Harsh.
And it's in the Apocrypha.
Yes. When we come to the Gospels, how do things change?
Well, a couple things that we could note, I think. Even the prominence, and I'm thinking here of the Gospel of Luke, the prominent role that women take in the telling of the story of Jesus itself is
right at the beginning.
From the very beginning, the story centers on Elizabeth and Mary. And that for us, I mean, it doesn't jump out at us, but from that perspective, that would have been very notable that it would begin. The story would begin in that way. And if we go to Matthew's gospel, the fact that there are women that are mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus.
That's right.
Which, again, these are things which, from the very start, as you look at the gospels, just reading them in that ancient world, people would have been startled and somewhat shocked and some of them scandalized by the prominent place that was given to women.
Yes. Yeah. Jesus as a rabbi. Of course, he's called a rabbi. I don't think he regarded himself officially as a keeper of the traditions of the fathers. But as a teacher, how would have his following have scandalized?
Well, we have a clear example of that in the Gospel of John chapter 4 with the woman at the well, where Jesus kind of sends the disciples in to pick up some lunch. And he ends up in this conversation with this Samaritan woman, and they are really scandalized when they come back and find out that he's been talking to this woman.
Well, it's doubly, you know, it's a Samaritan, mm-hmm. and it's a woman to top it off. So,
it's one of my favorite conversations, that one. And then she becomes his agent of hope to her own countrymen.
She does.
She goes out and preaches. She tells him, I found the Messiah.
Yeah. And very effective preacher, too.
Yes.
Very effective.
Brings her countrymen there. It says that women followed Jesus in a couple of places. They followed him to Judea. Mm-hmm. I don't think too many rabbis would have been proud to have had women in their retinue.
Nowhere in the Gospels are women hostile to Jesus.
Mm-hmm. No.
Nowhere. And I think that
mm-hmm.
yes. that to me is an even, you know, as he's being led out, as he's going out to his crucifixion, it is the women who are there present that he speaks to. Nowhere are they hostile to him.
The only place where Jesus sounds hostile is mm-hmm. to the Syrophoenician woman.
Yes.
But the end, the rest of the story, so to speak.
Yeah. But she isn't hostile to him.
No.
They seem open to Jesus, and Jesus likewise.
Maybe we should just tell our listeners what that story was about. The disciples and Jesus are traveling in Gentile country, and she comes and begs for him to heal her daughter. And the disciples get irritated with her because she's importunate. and Jesus says to her, it's not fair to give the children's food
to the dogs.
And in a sense, he was dogging her, wasn't he? But for a purpose.
Yes. A lesson to the disciples who had very rigid views.
She stays in there, and then she says, oh, yes, but the dogs eat the crumbs.
Yeah.
And Jesus says, you are a paragon of faith.
Yeah.
And that must have been a real story that shocked the disciples. Another story that I'm thinking of Jesus with women of ill repute. In fact, Jesus' ministry was one of bringing in the marginalized, putting his arms around people on the fringes of power and society. And the story of Simon, Simon invites Jesus to a banquet, and this woman of ill repute comes in, and really Luke's version is very troubling to a lot of males at that time and even today.
Yes, very much so. He didn't only, grant her forgiveness, but, she was allowed to touch him.
Kiss his feet.
Yes, kiss his feet. And women in ancient world were, usually unclean.
Yeah.
So this was impurity that would regulate. That would mean that you couldn't go to the temple unless you were sprinkled with the ashes of the red heifer and waited 7 days sometimes.
Yeah.
So, but Jesus doesn't have those barriers. He reaches beyond.
And then in John's Gospel, chapter 7, we find out that this woman was possibly. Mm-hmm. It says there that she was the one who washed his feet and so on. Was the sister of Martha and mm-hmm. Lazarus, mm-hmm. and that Jesus loved them very much. What evidence do we have in the New Testament about women in worship? A couple of texts come to mind for me. I don't know how much time we want to spend on this, but there's two texts, one in 1 Corinthians 14 and 1 Timothy 2, where women are prevented from speaking in church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these passages are passages that are very debated passages and often become seen as a standard to say that women should have no leadership positions, at least up front, which I think that on the surface that may be interpreted that way. I think if you look at Paul's letters across the board, they have to be placed in their context.
Yes.
Each of Paul's letters are written to specific churches dealing with specific problems.
Yeah.
And we see that especially in 1 Corinthians. Problem after problem after problem. And we see in those churches that, apparently, at least in 1 Corinthians, in Corinth, that that people were pushing the envelope to such an extent that it was causing problems with the relationship outside the church. And Paul says, hold on a second. There has to be order in service. And so I think those kind of the context of those help explain Paul's comments.
And, worship outside, even among the pagans, was the men were the participants. Mm-hmm. If there were participants in pagan worship, they were priestesses and cult prostitutes. Women could accompany their husbands, but usually they were well covered or else they stayed at home. Mm-hmm. And in synagogues, sat at the back, very often behind a veil. So I think much of it was to preserve the church from cultural misunderstanding at that time. And yet, Paul had fellow workers, didn't he? Women. Anybody come to mind?
Well, Tabitha, in Acts chapter 9, she's called a disciple.
A disciple.
Paul greets women and speaks of women in churches. I think of a passage in Acts 16 where there's a gathering outside of town, and it describes the women who had gathered there.
Yes.
And Paul goes to speak with them, and Lydia is one whose heart is open to receive the message, and they end up accepting her hospitality, staying in her home. So there's sort of an irony here that there weren't enough males for a synagogue to Paul for Paul to go to, and yet a church could begin with that group of women.
Yes. And I'm sure they weren't silent.
No, seeing as it was a church comprised of women.
The one I like is also in Romans chapter 16, actually a couple of them here, is Paul, you know, he's writing this letter and he says, I commend to you our sister Phoebe.
He's probably the one who carried the letter.
Yes.
I'm guessing.
Yes, so he entrusts her with what we could say is perhaps, the greatest, exposition of the gospel, the book of Romans. And he entrusts it to a woman.
Yes.
And then he calls her, that says that she is a, in Greek, a deacon, not a deaconess, but a deacon of the church. So once again, Paul's terminology is the same terminology he would use with a man.
Yes. Fellow workers of two women in Philippians, too.
Yes, yes.
Fellow workers.
The same thing.
Chapter 4.
And then also, of course, in Romans chapter 16, down in verse 7 is an interesting one, where Paul says, greet Andronicus and Junia.
Yes.
But it's even more interesting because, and perhaps, Bruce, you can steal the...
The word is Junian, and it could go in a masculine direction, which many translations say, and they add men of note among the apostles. The word men is not in the Greek.
Yes.
But that name, Junian, doesn't occur anywhere before or after. But Junia occurs many times as a woman's name. And one commentator thinks that it may be husband and wife. And they are both regarded as prominent among the apostles. So they're both regarded as apostles.
Which is a powerful statement.
Very powerful statement. So women were part of being agents of hope.
An active part.
Active part.
And just very quickly, I know we're right at the end, but all indications are that in the early Christian church, women outnumbered men to quite a significant degree. And that, to me, is an indication that they found in the church an open and accepting fellowship that they wanted to be a part of.
That's right. Gentlemen, thank you for your participation in the discussion. Again, thank you, John Campbell, our program engineer, for Good Word. This is Bruce Johansson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.